Okay, well, if that's all the hyperbola projects, then we'll start. Let me run through the solution then. Okay, so hopefully, let's go somewhere in the first part. Okay. Here we go. Okay, so six of you at least made an attempt. Okay.
Something like that. Plane's not exactly vertical. It's just a slant that way. Alright. But very crude picture. Now, up down here somewhere, we have our point P. And we want a 3D vector, right? Because I asked for x, y, and z components of something parallel to the line tangent to the hyperbola. Okay. We should be out here. Let's see, this is positive x, positive y, so let's assume we're somewhere out here, say. We want some vector u that points in either direction, really. So the simplest way to vector is kind of like what I did in the example last time, trying to give you a hint. Just differentiate implicitly. And you get a system of two equations. There's three variables. Just pick one of the variables to be an easy number, like 1, whatever. For example, that, okay? So I'm thinking my vector here is going to be a little... That's going to be my solution vector. I guess if I have dz positive, then it's going to be pointing kind of in the positive z direction, so up. I'm thinking of axes kind of like this. Now you solve these equations. This equation is the same everywhere, right? This one is, depending on where you are in the hyperbola, this equation will be different, right? basically that corresponds to the fact that depending on where you are on this plane, you're always going, the plane tangent to the plane is the same everywhere. But at different points on the double cone, the plane tangent to that point, to the double cone at that point, will face in a different direction. So
2 times 2 dx plus, and we know, and we've got a negative 1/2 of the dx plus 2 root 5 dy equals 2 times 3 1.
All the 2's will just cancel.
So in this example, we get dy is negative 3, 1. I think we'll get negative 2 over root 5. So if I plug that in, I'll get a negative 4 here. And over here, I'll have a negative 2, which adds up to negative 6. Yep. So this would be one solution.
And any other solution would be along the same line, so it would be a constant multiple, either positive or negative.
So every solution should look something like that, just up to a constant multiple.
Then the second part of the problem is you are looking at the vertices of the hyperbola.
I was giving basically lots of advice in this paragraph of instruction about one where you might actually find them. Right? So I said the axis of K is the z-axis. Because of that, A and B are the only two points at which the tangent to H is perpendicular to the z-axis.
Think about it this way. If you imagine the xy plane, right, cutting the cone in half and perpendicular to the z-axis, right, the vertices there are the points that get closest to that plane. So the tangent planes are also parallel the xy plane. So if you look at these equations for a tangent plane and you make the dz equals 0, That's what the second part is about. The tangent to the hyperbola is perpendicular to the x-axis. So it's got no z component. is just x and y components.
Okay. Now if you solve these, your dx is going to be 0, the second one, and therefore solving for y there,
let's be precise here. So we have dx is 0 and we also have dz is 0.
But you can't have all, but your vector is not
just going to be the zero vector, right? There is a tangent vector there of non-zero magnitude. So if these are 0, your dy vector is not 0. Right. But if dy is not 0, and the other two are, then look at this equation here. You have 2 times y times non-zero dy, but this is 0, this is 0. So you bring that equation in again, and you have, so 2y times a non-zero dy has to somehow come out to be 0. The only way that can happen is if y is 0.
If
2y and dy are all non-zero, the product would be non-zero. But then either the 2x dx would have to be non-zero, or this would have to be non-zero. But this is 0 because dz is 0, and then from this equation, dx is also 0. So the vertices occur at y equals 0. And that is what gives you enough information combined with the original two equations to find the vertices of the hyperbola.
Anybody get that right?
At least one of you got it right.
You eliminate the y very easily, then you can, for example, solve z for a formula in terms of x, 1 minus 2x. So that means that x has to equal plus or minus the quantity 1 minus 2x. That's the slightly more detail of the argument. So, if x is 1 minus 2x, then x has to be a third. If x is the opposite of 1 minus 2x, then x has to be 1. So the one with positive z-coordinate, the one we're labeling A, is that a third, 0, a third.
And the one with
negative z-coordinate will be at 1, 0, negative.
And then for the next part, I just want a line through
A and B.
That line N is what would usually be called the axis of the hyperbola. There's another kind of axis of hyperbola that goes perpendicular through the middle.
Now this should be an easy one. You should just have something like this. Standard trick is for if I give you 2 points, and you want to parameterize them, you do something like this. There's more than one way to write it, but what it boils down to is what I have here is I have in this case I have 1 times an arrow pointing from the origin to B plus a multiple T of an arrow that points from B to A. For example, like that. Yes. Right, you get positive or negative multiples of this arrow here, and so depending on what you add, positive or negative multiple of this arrow from B to A, added to a vector that points from the origin to B, you end up with a vector that points from the origin to any point on your line N that goes through A and B. So this one is supposed to be easy if you found the 2 points, because 2 points determine a line. That's true whether you're in 2 dimensions, 3 dimensions, any dimensions. And then there's part 4, which is about the foci. And I give you some advice for how roughly to find, one way to find the foci of the hyperbola. I say get the midpoint M. So lots of ways to get the midpoint. Okay, so they just take the average, right? So the average of a half and a third is 2/3. The average of 0 and 0 is 0. The average of 1/3 and negative 3/3 is negative 2/3. Okay. And then I said, let's let the vector V be the arrow from F to P. So P is somewhere on the hyperbola, not on the line N. So we have P there.
And so I just have arrows from F and G to P. And then I have my old arrow U, right? That was right here. That one is tangent to the hyperbola.
And so the big hint I give you here for how to find the foci is by using the fact that the angles between U and V and U and W are the same.
That hopefully more obvious would be the fact that F and G are equidistant from M.
So think of it like that. Okay? You have two points. You know they're on this line here, going from M. What direction does the line point? It's in the between B and A, right? If you look at what's involved in going from B to A, for example, one minus a third is two thirds, zero minus zero is zero, negative one minus a third is negative four thirds. So we have something in it. Technically, this is the arrow from the origin to F. So, but let's just call X, Y, Z the coordinates of F. Okay, so we have an arrow from M, and then in the same direction as going from B to A. We have some number, I'll call it S. All right, let's see here. So if we're going from in the direction from B to A, I guess we actually do this. We do A minus B, right? So negative two thirds, zero, positive four thirds. And I guess, how about we call G the, I'll call them X hat, Y hat, Z hat. So G would be just the mirror image of that, so to speak.
Right. Mirror image.
Because they're equidistant from F. So there's some S, right? Or if you go that far from M, right, you go in the direction from B to A, you'll get to the focus up there. You go the opposite way, you would get to the focus at G. Now, there's the matter of the angle. Okay. So figure that out. We would just look at the dot product. Dot product, of course, gives you cosine of angle times magnitudes. So, for example, if you did, let's see, now in terms of our V and W then. So what would the vector V be? Right, an arrow from F to P. So that means we would have to take 2 root 5 negative 3 minus x, y, z. Still have our U right there. Okay. So if these angles are the same, the only catch is this one is sort of pointing the wrong way, so because of that asymmetry that U is pointing that way, the dot products will not work out. After you divide by the magnitudes, the dot products will not be exactly the same, but they will be opposites of each other. So you'll have, we take dot product. So U dot V over magnitude of U, magnitude of V, over the negative of U dot W, magnitude of U dot W. That would capture what's going on with the angles. You can multiply both sides by the magnitude of U, and you can multiply also by the if I call this angle here theta, right, then I guess if I do that, then, for example, the negative will be on this side. for example, if you clear all the denominators, so you multiply both sides by magnitude u, magnitude v, magnitude w, and then you square that, you would get w dot w times dot v squared equals v dot v times w squared. And this equation can then solve for S after some simplification. Right, because if you look at all these dot products, you have everything in terms of S now. Let's see if anybody got that number. Like I asked you for more calculus 3 than you had. So I don't see anybody that got that far. Got that far, so it's hard to do number 5 because you don't have the coordinate. If you didn't find the foci, and then I'm not sure. I guess I can say a little bit about number 6.
This one, from P to F, you just look at the
magnitude, right? I didn't introduce. V is the arrow from my P to F, from F to P. This is from G to P. I just asked you to verify this. The way you get the magnitudes, of course, is with the three-dimensional version, square root of x component squared plus y component squared plus z component squared. So there's not much to check there. Distance equation, then the idea is, okay, if to show that that distance equation is true on the whole thing, vary P, so you want to differentiate the formula. Distance, right? Now you have an arrow from so you know this is true at one point. So you want to show that as you move around on the hyperbola, this, the two sides of the equation always change by the same amount, so that the equation always stays true. Constant. So you just need to show that this side over here is also a constant. So you differentiate it and you want to get zero. Okay.
Now, if you differentiate that, what you get is going to be related to this.
It's the equality of these two angles that ensures that the difference in the distances stays the same.
So, let's see here. Okay, so if you take the, you'll get the, if you implicitly differentiate, you'll get FQ dot the differential of it, right? So dx, dy, dz, so. And for this one,
you have an arrow. So it's going to be like this picture here. Now, it's not quite an angle, right? But, for example, you could divide both sides through by the magnitude. Right? This factor here, let's take this magnitude.
So now, you do indeed have an angle, have a cosine of an angle. Of this, we have somewhere along H, F, G, some point Q, and arrows. So you have your point Q, and then you have something along the tangent. So, if I call this angle alpha and angle beta, right, this is boiling down here to showing that the angle between this line from F to a point Q on the parabola from the one focus, and then that angle with the tangent line, and then the other angle formed by the tangent line at Q and the arrow from G to Q. It boils down to showing they're the same angle, because this is the cosine of alpha, this whole fraction here. This is the cosine of theta. So it's boiling down to showing that those angles are the same. And now, you don't work directly with the angles when you try and prove this. You work with the cosines. But basically here, we ended up solving an equation for this number S. That's what you have to do to get the actual points of the foci F and G. Okay? And what happens is that solution actually would have been the same if I had used any other point. The way you actually prove this sort of thing is you use these equations here, right? That are valid, the implicit differentiation there. Those two equations are valid for any point on the hyperbola. So when you plug in those equations, this, you eliminate two of the variables here, first of all. And And you should be able to show that everything actually will cancel out because of the way you selected F and G to satisfy the equations that equate the angles here at P. You can make a very, I've spent most of the class on this already, but that was the kind of calculus 3 stuff I was going for with this. It's these kinds of methods. These characterizations here, these nice facts that these angles match, and then this other property, the difference of distances to the foci stays constant as you move along the hyperbola. Those are two equivalent ways of defining a hyperbola, actually, in terms of its foci. That's what all these bidirectional arrows are getting at. The ancient Greeks didn't use lots of algebraic calculus to prove this, of course. They used stuff in the style of Euclid's Elements. Even with our modern tools, actually doing these kinds of computations is not exactly easy. The new chapter we're on, chapter 9, yeah. Medieval mathematics in the Islamic empires. That stuff all started, that religion started in the 600s. By the 700s, it had become not just a religion, but it was a big empire over which there had been a series of descendant empires. Centuries. And I'll mention a few mention a few things today.
We'll talk about some other stuff
at greater length tomorrow. Now, so of course, this is something where there's some very strong influence from the Greek and Indian mathematics, 600s and earlier, goes to this is the kind of the most important flow of influence in Shin. So they conquered a lot of places, including Greece and parts of the Roman Empire, as their empire grew, and so they got access to what the Greeks had done, and they also the empire also expanded into India. So they definitely got access to Indian mathematicians. Been working on. And then they developed their own mathematics building off of that. Now, when I read Islamic, I don't mean that somehow it's different, different math per se. Sense that, it's only true in one context or something. I just mean math done by people. Not, the individuals may or may not have been in members of the religion, but people that were doing mathematics in an empire with Muslim rulers in the medieval times. So it was the 800s. Of course, they have the concept of subtraction, but no negative numbers. So that makes some things in algebra more difficult because you have to break things into lots of different cases. Or if you have negative numbers, you can merge them all into one case. Like our quadratic formula, ax squared plus bx plus c equals 0, and then our solution formula, right? It's based on that standard form. And if you don't have negative numbers, then you can't have negative coefficients. So you have to have cases. This is despite Indian mathematics having negative numbers. And so that so, you consider this versus all the cases you would have to have if you only allow positive coefficients, right? So, if a coefficient is 0, I can just leave it off. So you could have, look at this. Look at this.
have this.
Just by convention, if there's three non-zero things, right, two of them will have the same sign, and so the other one take its opposite, and so you can have an equation with two things on one on the left side and one thing on the right side. So if there's three non-zero terms, you could always put it in this form by moving two of the things to the left side that have a like sign, moving the third thing to the other side. And if it's all negatives, then multiply by negative 1. So then think of it in one of these forms, because you'd always get one of these forms. And the only other difference would be if there's a term that's 0. Right. Well, if there's a term that's 0, okay, then things get less interesting, right? Oh, well. Depending on whether or not you have one of these is 0, you get more forms. There's one work that classified them into 6 forms. You have these 3, and then if you make this a 0, or make this a 0, make this a 0. You can either zero out the quadratic coefficient, the linear coefficient, or the constant coefficient, and you can get 3 more distinct forms if you consider it different between 0 and positive. You have this emphasis on these practical guides for solving equations. And these would be polynomial equations. They would have their quadratic formulas, different ones for each of the cases. They would also use standard steps like substitution. So, for example, if you had x squared minus 1 squared plus 5 times x squared minus 1 equals 7. You could make a substitution, right? Have a new variable that you name for the, maybe y is x squared minus 1. Solve for y, and then you solve x squared minus 1 equals y for x. And then they'd have ideas of like adding or subtracting things from both sides of an equation. Since they didn't have negative numbers, they had two ways of thinking about this last one. Like if you had this, you want to add two. We think of it as add 2x to both sides. But but then subtraction is very different than just, you know. They don't think it was equivalent. Oh, we're just adding a negative or something. So there's that kind of move, and then another kind of move where instead of adding a subtracted quantity to both sides, you subtract a number from both sides. And so that they really thought these are conceptually different. This one is Al, probably not going to pronounce it, Mukabala, and this one is algebra. Okay, so algebra comes from that. Comes from that expression in Arabic, algebra. And I guess briefly they save the rest for next time, but you look at what they're doing in the 1100s and the 1200s in terms of their algebra. We have law of exponents as you have to have cases, and depending on the sign, I mean they didn't have our modern notation for it, but this idea essentially. They would think of it in terms of a sequence of powers of x, and how far do you move along the sequence, and how that corresponds to multiplying or dividing by a power of x. So depending on whether you're multiplying by a positive x or multiplying a negative power of x, they would think of it as multiplying or dividing. And they had Pascal's triangle. Everybody seems to get that eventually. And interestingly, we have solutions. Now again, they're only interested in positive real numbers, right? Not negative numbers, certainly not complex numbers. Right? So also positive real solutions to cubic equations. And classification of cubic equations by number of solutions. But they're only counting positive real solutions. Of course, that's not trivial, right? Because you can have three pictures here, right? You can have one solution if it's positive. You can have two solutions. You can have three solutions. And of course, you could have no solutions. Okay. So we'll talk about some other Islamic mathematics besides algebra next time. Yeah.